the text to Rachel and waited for her reply. Street level at the station?
Perfect.
Yep, he had it bad. What was worse? He didn't care. He saw her a block away. How that was possible in a sea of people all rushing to leave the city, he didn't know. But Rachel stood like a beacon for him to find. She waved when she noticed him. This is nuts. The crowd was much thicker on the way home.
It will thin out on the second train.
She moved beside him down the steps and into the Manhattan subway. On the platform, people stood behind the line, waiting for the train to arrive. Street performers played by the walls, making the already loud space deafening. Unlike the ride in, Rachel pushed into the car when it arrived and found a pole to hold on to while the train moved. Jason had no choice but to push in close, not that he minded. Rachel smiled when he slid up next to her.
"Did you have a good day?"
he asked, not sure how the small talk was going to work out.
"I did. You?"
"The snow slowed things down in the office."
"Is that a bad thing?"
"It made for some trouble with flights, but it all worked out. Safety first, and all that."
She shook her head. "Sometimes I forget that there are actual Fairchild planes out there, flying every day and night."
"That's the goal."
The train stopped. People shoved in. Jason moved closer.
"Do you like flying?"
she asked.
"Love it."
"Do you get up there often?"
He shook his head yes, then no.
"No. Glenn, Trent, and I force each other to fly with each other at least once a year. I fly more, but it's the transatlantic flight that reminds me why I love it so much."
"Why?"
"I don't know. Something about taking the controls and leaving one country and landing in another."
"Why don't you do it more?"
"Work, obligations. There's always so much to do here."
"But you're the boss."
"Which means I'm responsible."
Rachel shook her head.
"For everyone."
That felt strange to say aloud.
"I'm not even sure how many employees we have right now. Pilots and mechanics all over the world. Everyone in this office, the one in London. A lot of households depend on what we do to put food on the table. My father never lost sight of that."
"And you took over for your father when he died?"
She was staring at him, a softness in her eyes.
"Firstborn, it was implied."
"It wasn't in writing?"
"My parents left it up to us. Glenn, Trent, and I got pissing drunk after their death and decided what was best."
Jason noted the station they were at. They had one more stop before they had to switch trains.
"Did you really want to take over all of it?"
He looked directly into her eyes.
"Did you really want to become a mother to a teenager?"
Instead of answering, she slowly smiled with a nod.
"Still glad I did."
"Yeah, me too."
Jason was fairly certain that was the first time he'd ever confessed his feelings about taking over for his father. They switched trains and found a place to sit for the remainder of their commute.
"How is it Owen is so well adjusted?"
he asked. "Emily." The name apparently answered the question for her. "She was fire and light. There wasn't a thing in this world she was afraid of trying to conquer. I didn't know her when she had Owen, but she replayed enough of that part of her life with me, it felt as if I was there."
"How did you meet?"
"I hadn't left college. I was doing an internship for a high-fashion clothing line. Em worked in sales. We hit it off. I think I was one of her only friends who didn't mind doing stuff with Owen. She was older, full of knowledge and spunk. I was just starting out and inspired by her energy."
"And she infused all of that into Owen?"
he asked.
"Oh, yeah. He oozed confidence early on. She set rules, told him the consequences, and always followed through.
I remember a trip we took to Disneyland. We weren't an hour in, and Owen started whining about something. She gave him one warning,
told him if he didn't stop, we were leaving. Owen tested her, and we left.
Really?
Yeah, and tickets to Disneyland aren't cheap. Owen tested her after that, but she only had to tell him once that they were leaving, the toy would be thrown away, whatever, and he snapped out of his fit. Of course, that wasn't quite the way things worked out when he got older. He became quite the negotiator. Emily gave him say in many of her decisions, which is where his confidence comes from. He doesn't take crap from anyone, but knows when he needs to keep his trap shut. Rachel sounded like the proud parent herself.
Does he take authority from you?
She shrugged. I haven't really had to come down on him about anything. He does better than okay in school. The kids he hangs out with are respectful and don't seem to be in the wrong crowd. Because I'm not his mother, we get to have a friendship. Losing a parent changes you. She looked up and met Jason's gaze. But I don't have to tell you that.
I was older.
Still. He was drowning in her smile. If he didn't continue the conversation, he was at serious risk of reaching out to remove fake lint from her hair or brush his fingers against hers. Anything to touch her and ignite the flame that burned low in his gut, which he wanted to grow.
Are your parents still around?
Yeah, my parents are typical Southern Californians, love the sun and hate the snow, which is why they aren't coming around this Christmas. They want to visit in the spring.
It's nice that time of year.
Dad still works, so it isn't like he can visit all the time. They're very fiscally responsible. For the remainder of the ride home, Rachel spoke of her parents and brother. It was obvious that she missed them, but wasn't lost without them by her side. Her independence was just one of the things Jason was beginning to admire about her. Back in the parking lot of the local station, the snow was piled everywhere. The cars that hadn't moved all day held several inches. The slope of the Jeep's windshield made quick work of snow removal, and they were on the road and headed back to Rachel's within a few minutes.
Wow, the snow seems thicker here.
It will stick around for a few days. Once it starts to melt and freeze over at night, driving becomes even more difficult.
Great.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
She looked at him over her shoulder. Is that your way of saying I should take the train again tomorrow? He drove past the hill that ditched his Audi and made the turn toward her home.
I'll pick you up at 6:30.
Jason caught her grin and noted a lack of denial. The lights of his Jeep caught the snowman greeting them from Rachel's front yard. The colorful lights glistened on the roof, and the tree inside her house welcomed them.
Looks like Owen has been busy, she said.
I used to love snow days.
He pulled into her driveway, left the engine running. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
She jumped down from the Jeep, grabbed her purse.
See you in the morning.
All right.
He watched her walk to the front door and waited until she turned and waved at him before he pulled away. And he prayed it would snow again before the end of the week. By Friday, the snow had melted to a few inches, and taking the train was no longer a requirement to make it into work on time. And since Rachel had promised Julie she would join her for a girls' night out after work, there wasn't a choice about driving into the city.
You sure you'll be okay?
She quizzed Owen while he was eating breakfast before she left Friday morning.
Jeez, Rachel, I'm 15, not 5. I'm going to the football game, just like always. I won't miss you not being here.
She held her little black dress in a garment bag. A small makeup kit was shoved in her purse.
I won't be too late.
Take your time. It isn't like you ever do this kind of thing.
Okay.
She picked up the boots she would wear out and filled the back seat of her car with everything she needed. It was a typical Friday at work, with people peeling away early to get a jump on the weekend. Gerald told Rachel and Julie to leave early once he got wind of their evening plans. By 5:15, Rachel was standing in Julie's apartment down in the meatpacking district, pulling her little black dress over her head. I heard the apartments in New York were small, but holy cow, Rachel told her friend. If I went bigger, I'd need a roommate. Been there, done that, lost my computer and my stash of cash when she moved out.
Really?
Before Trisha, there were four of us in a two-bedroom flat, a big loft that we partitioned off to give us our private space. Damon kept bringing his boyfriend over, and listening to the two of them go at it every night killed it for me. So I live in a glorified closet with a kitchen I never really cook in. Sounds reasonable to me. Rachel adjusted her dress, glanced at her profile in the mirror mounted to the back of the bathroom door. I honestly don't remember the last time I dressed to go out. Julie tucked her head around the corner and looked at her. If I had your boobs, I'd rock that dress every day. She looked down, wasn't unhappy with her cleavage. They're not that big. Julie moved to stand beside her, stuck out her chest. This is what it's like to be hit with the Korean gene.
Maybe a push-up bra? Rachel suggested.
This is a push-up bra.
Oops.
How about a boyfriend that will buy you a pair? They both laughed. Someday. Rachel tucked beside her in the bathroom to fix her hair. She'd given it little thought after winter set in. Wearing a beanie or muffs over her ears had become the norm, which meant teasing her hair to some kind of perfection never happened. Julie groaned and took the pale pink lipstick out of Rachel's hand. Tonight is a red night.
It is?
Yep, here.
From a never-ending drawer of makeup, Julie unearthed a shade of red Rachel wouldn't have thought to buy. She had to admit, once it was on, it worked. By 6, they were headed out the door.
It's early for the nightclubs, but we can hit happy hour, grab some food, and then find some live music.
All within walking distance?
We have dozens of options in a few blocks.
Julie tucked her arm around Rachel's.
You're gonna love this city.
The first bar they walked into was just outside Julie's building and across the street. Happy hour was in full Friday night swing, and everyone in the place knew Julie by name. Rachel wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. Julie introduced her to half a dozen people before they ordered. Like many places in Manhattan, the bar was a tight spot with a dozen tables lining the walls around the space. Finding a place to sit wasn't an option, even at their early hour.
How come we haven't seen you here before?
The bartender had dyed Christmas red hair and a tank top that exposed more flesh than a bikini on the beach in California. I live outside the city, Rachel said.
She's been here 4 months, and this is her first night out.
The bartender offered wide-eyed disbelief.
Welcome to the crazy.
Rachel sipped her vodka soda.
Thanks, I think.
She scanned the bar, not sure what she was searching for.
See anything you like?
Julie asked her. Rachel looked again, decided there wasn't anyone of the male variety that tickled an itch.
Everyone looks perfect. Everyone in this town is a wannabe actor or model. You have the whole musician crowd, and they all look perfect, too.
It was one of the things Rachel had noticed before the weather went bad. The women had amazing legs, probably because of the amount of walking everyone did in the city. And the men were beautiful. They dressed as if they were one chance meeting away from finding the perfect agent or gig. While she didn't consider herself unworthy, Rachel didn't believe she measured up to a New Yorker her same age.
I'm not worthy, Rachel teased. See why I said little black dress? Jules!
Julie turned around and beamed.
Mimi!
Mimi had to be 6 feet tall, but maybe that was the 4-inch heels she balanced herself on. Bone thin, with high cheekbones and perfectly black hair. She was stunning.
Mimi, this is my friend Rachel. Rachel, this is Mimi.
Rachel stuck her hand out. Felt a little awkward when Mimi's handshake resembled that of a child.
I'm guessing you're a model?
That had the woman beaming. Why, thank you. Sit.
Julie patted the bar stool next to them.
I can't for long. I'm meeting Monique.
Julie's smile dropped.
I thought you two broke it off.
She's an addiction.
What can I say? Julie nudged Rachel.
I could never hang with Mimi if she wasn't into girls. I'd never get laid.
The three of them laughed. For the duration of one drink, the three of them chatted about the men and women walking into the bar. Monique showed up, and the men who were eyeing Mimi abruptly stopped when the bombshell slid her arm around her girlfriend's waist before welcoming her with a kiss. Rachel and Julie waved them off, settled their bill, and worked their way to a cozy and very filled restaurant a block away. Once they ordered, Julie brought up work.
You know they are grooming you for management.
I hope so.
Which means you'll be my boss. I have to admit, that is gonna suck a little.
Why?
I've been here for 3 years.
Rachel opted for water since she would be driving later that night. Julie was on her third drink since they'd left her apartment. So why not apply for management?
I need to finish my degree first.
Are you taking classes? Rachel didn't think so. They'd never spoken of it.
I thought about it. I don't know. Not sure I want the pressure. It will give me wrinkles.
It wasn't a secret that part of the reason Rachel took the job with Fairchild Charters was because they were looking for leadership in marketing. So far, everything was pointing that way.
So what's happening between you and Jason?
The question came from nowhere. Rachel hesitated.
Nothing. Uh-huh. You do remember the part where you told me the guy you helped that was stranded on the side of the road was killer good-looking?
There wasn't any denying that.
He is killer good-looking.
They all are,
Julie said.
True.
Julie tapped the edge of her cocktail with a fingernail.
You're seeing him, aren't you?
No!
Of course not.
He's our boss.
You said that way too fast, girlfriend.
Julie lifted her fork and used it as a tool for pointing.
You've been quiet at work. I see you texting more during your day than ever before. Smiling into your phone. I know the signs that there is a guy in a woman's life.
Rachel sighed and offered most of the truth. We are not dating, I assure you. I told him we couldn't.
Ha! But he wanted to!
She looked down at her salad.
Yes. I knew it! The way he watches you in our meetings is a dead giveaway.
I'm not going there, Julie. Just because he helped us with the Christmas lights and tree doesn't make us dating. Dating requires dinner and drinks and...
He hung up your Christmas lights? Jason Fairchild, hung your lights.
Rachel squeezed her eyes shut. She hadn't meant to say that. He offered before I knew he was a Fairchild. Julie's smile beamed.
That's priceless.
And no one at work should know about it. Rachel stared.
Promise me you'll keep this between us.
Julie pushed her lips into a thin line and pretended to button them. Rachel doubted the button would hold.
What does Owen think of him?
It was hard not to smile.
Owen likes him. A lot.
Julie stuck her fork in her salad.
I'm guessing he isn't the only one.
Rachel spoke around her food. Not going there. Fastest way to lose your job is to date your boss.
Uh-huh. I'll remind you of that.
For the next hour, they talked about anything and everything outside of Jason Fairchild. By 8:30, they were standing 3 deep at a bar just a couple of blocks from where they'd started. Rachel sucked on soda water and kept her eye on her watch. There was a time when the bar scene was one she enjoyed. The young energy and the spark between strangers that created conversation and connections. Julie introduced her to many of her friends, or perhaps barroom acquaintances. Twice, Rachel texted Owen to see how his night was going. Twice, he told her she was being a ninny. The third time, he took a picture of his room, telling her he was tucked into bed and not to worry. Rachel knew there was no way in hell Owen was in bed before 9.
"Are you texting Jason?"
Julie asked, trying to catch a glimpse of her phone. "Owen."
"Who is Owen?"
the guy who'd been attempting to grab Rachel's attention over the last half hour asked.
"My friend's son, who lives with me."
She really needed a better way to say that.
"You have a kid?"
"He's not my..."
She stopped.
"Yes, kinda."
"I don't do kids."
And the pickup guy was gone. Julie stepped in and watched him go.
"Whatever."
Rachel tucked her phone into her purse and sighed.
"I should go. I'm an hour from home and the roads are still slick." "It's early,"
Julie complained. "I know, but Owen is home alone. I don't want to push it." Julie pouted.
"This was great. Really. I want to do it again."
Rachel glanced around them.
"I'll walk you back to my apartment so you can get your things."
No, just bring them to work on Monday.
You stay. I'll taxi to my car at the office."
"You sure?" Rachel kissed Julie's cheek. "Thank you for getting me out." Within 20 minutes, she was in her car and on her way home. Since when did she call an end to a Friday night before 9? On the bright side, there wasn't any traffic to speak of, and she pulled into her driveway just after 10. Lights were on in the living room and upstairs. She pulled into the garage and walked around the boxes still piled in the corners. Once inside, she shook out of her big jacket and left her purse on the kitchen table as she walked through. Voices drew her to the second floor. The temperature dropped as she climbed the stairs. At first she thought Owen had his TV up loud, but then she realized the door to his room was open and no one was inside.
"Owen?"
She called his name and walked to her room. The door was closed, and light and noise came from the other side of the door. Owen's music from bands Rachel couldn't identify reached her ears.
"Dude, you're not very good at this,"
she heard Owen say.
"You're one to talk. You're wearing more than you're getting on the walls."
"Jason?" She sniffed and knew exactly what the guys were up to.
"I have an excuse. I'm 15.
"Ha, I have an excuse. I'm old."
Rachel smiled behind her hand before slowly opening the door. Her bed and dresser were pulled away from the wall. The nightstand sat on her bed, with the lamps plugged in and lighting the room. Plastic tarps covered everything. The paint she'd picked up, which had been sitting in the garage since Halloween, now covered most of her walls. The window in the room was open, helping to air out the fumes and letting in the cold. Jason had on a pair of worn jeans and a denim long-sleeved shirt. Owen was decked in a pair of old shorts and a t-shirt. Owen saw her first.
"Aw, man!"
"What?"
Jason used a step stool to reach the corners with a brush.
"Jiggy's up, dude."
"Wow."
Rachel stepped in, careful with the splatters of paint. Jason turned to look at the sound of her voice.
"What are you guys? This is fantastic."
"I wanted to surprise you,"
Owen said, grinning.
"Color me surprised."
"Whoa."
Jason stared at her, his eyes taking their time, looking her up and down. She'd forgotten that she was still in her little black dress and boots that went to her knees. Heat reached her cheeks with his blatant stare.
"What are you doing here?"
He sucked in a long, suffering breath.
"Owen asked me for help. I knew I couldn't get it done in one night by myself."
"You didn't have to."
"I know. Now, get out of here so we can finish. We're almost done."
Rachel put her hands in the air, laughing.
Okay.
She bumped up the thermostat and removed her boots. Less than 30 minutes later, Owen ran down the stairs to retrieve a large plastic bag from the garage before disappearing back upstairs. When he came back down again, the tarp had been bundled up and shoved in the sack. He opened the front door and placed it on the porch.
Okay, you can see it now.
With her hand through the crook of Owen's arm, Rachel walked with him up the stairs and back into her bedroom. The furniture was still pulled away, but everything was back on the ground. The painter's tape had been stripped from the molding, and the window was still open a crack. Jason stood in the center of the room, smiling.
Wow, guys. This is wonderful.
You might want to sleep on the couch tonight, Jason suggested.
The smell of the room would drive her out.
Good idea.
Consider it an early Christmas present, Owen said.
She hugged him hard. I never expected this. The home improvement projects had been hers. Owen had helped when he could, but she hadn't expected him to do any of it on his own. Owen yawned.
We wanted to have it finished before you got home.
I didn't think you'd get out of Manhattan before 10, Jason said.
I'd still be there if Julie had her way.
I'm gonna shower, Owen announced. Thanks again for helping,
he told Jason.
Anytime.
The two bumped fists, and then Owen left them alone.
I don't know what to say, Rachel admitted.
Replacing the olive green with this lighter shade brought the space into the current century. Jason took a few steps toward her, looked above her head.
Thank you, Works.
She turned her back to him, looked at the ceiling.
This is one of the nicest things anyone could have done for me.
It's paint.
It's more than just paint. It's a project. A ton of work.
She turned back around to find him right beside her. A spot of paint dotted his cheek, and she lifted her thumb to brush it off without thinking.
It smeared. Oops.
Better?
He asked, grinning.
The early American look works well for you.
Is that right?
She laughed. He glanced down.
The sexy black dress works well for you.
Is that right?
She bounced his words back his way. He leaned closer. She didn't back up.
Didn't want to. Rachel.
She watched her name on his lips.
Yes?
Jason slid the backs of his fingertips on her collarbone and onto her neck. She shivered.
You didn't say thank you,
he whispered. Rachel licked her lips.
Thank you, Jason.
His eyes found hers briefly, and his lips moved closer.
You're welcome.
Her chest lifted with short, unsteady breaths, the heat of his lips only a hair away from hers.
Oh, God,
she said, before taking the last step and reaching his kiss. His lips were soft, his touch tender.
How did he smell so damn good?
This was stupid, on so many levels, but she couldn't stop from touching him any more than she could avoid the smell of fresh paint in the room. Jason folded her into his arms and arched her back. Everything tingled when his open mouth kiss deepened and explored. She could drown in his kiss alone. But when his fingers fanned over the small of her back, she melted. When was the last time she'd been held this close, or felt this wanted?
There was no doubt Jason wanted her, and she'd be foolish to think she didn't want more of him.
Her fingers clawed at his chest through his shirt, his lips never left hers. She should come up for air, but was afraid to break the spell.
Logic would seep in, and she wanted nothing to do with it.
Jason's hand slid past her hip and squeezed. There were stars, hot, desirable stars shooting in her stomach and warming her body for the man touching her. She lifted her leg, her hips pushed forward. She didn't realize her move until she felt him react with a groan. He pulled back, smoky eyes staring down.
Logic marched forward. Not yet.
She pulled him back to her lips, didn't stop him when he filled his hand with her breast. Nipples hardened,
and her body strained for more.
Hey, Jason, I put your keys by the...
Owen's voice stopped them cold.
Oops, sorry.
Jason's hand dropped. Rachel squeezed her eyes closed. When she opened them, Owen had already backed out of the room. She dropped her forehead on Jason's chest and started to laugh.
That's a first, Jason said in her hair.
She took stock of how she was holding him, where his hands were on her. Thank God they hadn't removed any clothing.
Oh, boy.
Jason pulled far away enough to lift her chin with one finger so he could look at her.
Don't overanalyze this,
he told her.
How can I not? Just don't.
He had a goofy smile, and the paint smear on his face had her grinning.
But you're my...
He shook his head, stopped her words with a finger to her lips.
I'm just a guy, fallen for a girl.
Jason, how could he say that?
And you're just a girl, fallen for a guy.
You make it sound so easy. It doesn't have to be complicated. But it was, and they both knew it. He pulled out of her arms and held her hands.
I'm going home. Going to take a very long cold shower and try to get some sleep.
She could use the cold shower herself. At the front door, he kissed her again. She let him.
I'll buy you a new dress,
he said, looking down. Rachel followed his gaze. Splatters of paint dotted her outfit.
Oh, no.
He placed a hand on the side of her face.
It was worth it.
Much as she hated to admit it,
it was.
Chapter 14. Many corporate businesses housed in the heart of Manhattan all but closed down for the last couple of weeks of the year. Not Fairchild Charters. The private charter business hopped this time of year. Affluent people couldn't always get the commercial flights they wanted, so they sucked up the cost, booked a charter. The other, more frequent flyers booked their planes months in advance to avoid the hassle of busy holiday traffic and delays. Much like retail worked the day after Thanksgiving to put their businesses in the black, Fairchild did the same, booking more in the month of December than any other 2 months combined. Jason made a point not to visit Rachel at work. The weather stayed surprisingly warm, not allowing for the excuse to carpool to the train station. He didn't remember the last time he prayed for snow until that year. Just because he didn't physically see her at work didn't mean they weren't talking. He would send a flirty text, much of which centered around the type of dress he wanted to buy her to replace her green paint-spattered polka-dot black dress she now had. She'd pretend he wasn't being too personal, and he'd ask her if she always tasted like honey. The company Christmas party was on a Saturday. As much as he wanted to have Rachel come as his date, he knew she'd never allow it. Instead, he greeted the employees and invited guests and customers. A band played holiday music while the cocktail party progressed. The venue they rented filled quickly, making it hard for him to spot her. When he did, he forgot to breathe.
Wow.
She wore red, with spiky black heels showing off her legs.
What?
Glenn stood beside him.
Oh, wow indeed. You're married,
Jason reminded him before walking away from his brother. Jason mingled with a few guests before making his way to her side.
Merry Christmas,
Julie said when he walked up to the both of them.
Merry Christmas to you too.
The place looks lovely, Rachel told him.
You'd never guess I had a hand in picking the decorations,
he teased.
Really?
Julie asked.
Most of the guys I know are colorblind. I might have had a little help.
Rachel laughed. He wasn't sure if Julie caught on or was simply thirsty.
I'm grabbing a glass of wine. Want one, Rachel?
I'm good, thanks.
Suit yourself.
Jason leaned close, whispered in her ear.
You're killing me in that dress.
She smiled.
I had a black one, but someone painted it green. He kept a respectful 3 feet away and wished they'd picked a smaller venue as an excuse to move closer.
Where is Owen tonight?
Staying with Ford.
Any news on Daddy coming to visit?
She frowned. Christmas Eve. We're invited to the Colemans for a perfectly stuffy dinner with tension.
I'm sorry.
Me too. I tried to push it off. Owen wants nothing to do with it.
Don't go.
I have to, Jason. Tarek assured me there wouldn't be any more bad-mouthing of Emily, and TJ has the right to see his son. We need to try and make this work.
Hey, Jason!
They both turned to the sound of Trent's voice.
Hello, Rachel.
Monica moved between them.
Merry Christmas.
The women hugged. Jason envied his sister-in-law.
How are you liking your first New York winter?
Trent asked Rachel.
It's not as bad as I thought it would be.
Are you going home for Christmas? Monica asked.
No, Owen and I are staying here.
Just the two of you? She nodded.
He'll probably play video games most of the day and only duck his head out of cyberspace long enough to eat.
Monica glanced at Jason and Trent.
You should join us.
Now Jason wanted to hug Monica.
I couldn't. Why not? We have room. There's already a crowd. Don't you think, Jason?
Monica asked him.
I think that's a great idea.
Rachel matched his stare.
I don't know.
I'm 10 minutes down the road. If we're boring, you can go home.
Hey, speak for yourself. I'm not boring,
Trent told his older brother. I'll talk to Owen.
Good, that's settled.
Monica pulled Rachel away by her elbow.
Let me introduce you to Mary.
Their voices faded as they walked away.
Looks like someone has a date for Christmas after all,
Trent said.
Don't let her hear you say that, or she'll back out.
Why?
Because she works for us.
It doesn't look as if that's going to stop you.
Jason couldn't keep his eyes off her ass.
It's not.
Trent patted him on the back.
Come on, let me buy you a drink.
It's an open bar.
Okay, let me get you a drink. And I'll join in.
The Colemans lived 40 minutes north of them, and holiday traffic made it worse.
We won't have to deal with this tomorrow,
Rachel told Owen as they drove bumper to bumper.
I wish we didn't have to deal with this today.
It might not be that bad.
You say that every time.
She gripped the wheel. That's because I pray every time that it will get better.
What if it doesn't? What if they continue to be douchebags?
I wish I had an easy answer for that, Owen. Maybe TJ will help the situation.
Or maybe he'll be a superior ass and make it worse.
Watch your language. Owen rolled his eyes.
Oh, please. You're thinking it, too.
Thinking, not saying.
She smiled at him. He grinned back.
We'll get through this. Play nice. We eat dinner. They will probably give you a present or two.
I don't want their charity.
Take it anyway. And smile.
Then, when you're ready to go, tell them you're feeling sick or have a headache or something. Each home sat on a minimum of 2 manicured acres. The lawns were covered with leftover snow from 2 nights before, a pattern that Rachel had noticed since the first flake fell. People had told her it was unusually warm for that time of year and warned her that it wasn't uncommon for snow to come down and stay for quite some time. It was the second time they'd been to the Colemans' home. The colonial 3-story brick structure was as cold as the people inside. They stood by the white lights from the front door and waited while the ridiculous chime of their doorbell went through its song. Owen hummed the death march under his breath, and Rachel started cracking up. They both stopped laughing when Tarek opened the door.
Come in, come in. Merry Christmas.
There was noise in the house. A lot of noise.
Are we late?
No, you were right on time.
They stepped inside the white stone foyer and took off their coats. Rachel had opted for slacks and a sweater and insisted that Owen wear a button-up shirt. Tarek took their coats and placed them in a very full hall closet.
Come in. Let me introduce you to everyone.
Owen stuck to her side and whispered,
I thought it was just them and us.
So did I.
They realized their mistake when they walked into the great room packed with people.
He's here!
Rachel heard a woman say from across the room. D'Adria approached them, wearing a dress that belonged in a runway fashion show. The floor-length formal made Rachel feel completely underdressed.
Here is my lovely grandson.
Her smile was entirely too wide, her words overly animated. She pulled him away from Rachel's side without so much as a hello.
Let me introduce you to your family.
Rachel scanned the room for TJ and found him in the back, watching his son. Owen was surrounded by people within seconds. The hair on Rachel's neck stood on end. They'd been ambushed. No one had said anything about some massive family reunion. Although she should have thought it was a possibility, she didn't see it coming. Rachel stood out like a red apple in a sea of green. Nearly everyone ignored her, as if she wasn't in the room. A few looked her way and whispered to each other.
Hi,
a voice came from behind.
I'm Selma. You must be Rachel.
Selma had the only kind smile in the room aimed at her.
Hello.
I'm D'Adria's niece.
Somewhere in her early 20s, and owning some of D'Adria's height.
You look shell-shocked.
We weren't expecting this many people.
And from a few feet away, Rachel noticed when Owen's face went blank. He was going through the paces of being nice, but she didn't think it would last.
Aunt D'Adria always leaves out details.
Is everyone here family?
Mostly.
Rachel had no idea. She still held the wine she'd brought with her for their small holiday dinner, which they'd planned on skipping out on as soon as they possibly could. From the reception line that stood to meet Owen, that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. She watched as TJ walked up to Owen and opened his arms. Instead of offering a hug, Owen put his hand out to shake. At 15, Owen was only a few inches shorter than his father, and there was no mistaking the resemblance.
We're glad you're here, Owen.
Rachel noticed Owen's shoulders stiffen. She handed the wine to Selma and walked to him without apology.
Hello, TJ,
Owen addressed his father. Some of the family around them muttered among themselves. She had to literally push her way to Owen's side. There weren't many times she'd seen Owen vulnerable. A couple of times when they were in the hospital, when it became apparent Em wasn't going to make it, and again at her funeral. Right at that moment, Owen glanced around the room, his eyes wide.
Merry Christmas, TJ.
Rachel attempted to disrupt the tension.
Hello, Rachel.
Owen and I had no idea your family was so large.
TJ held his arms wide.
Well, we are.
Rachel looked at D'Adria.
A little warning might have been warranted. So you could have kept him away from us?
The room went silent.
Mom?
TJ looked at his son.
We're a lot to take in.
Wait until Uncle Theo starts drinking,
someone in the crowd said. Several people started laughing.
You okay?
Rachel asked Owen. He attempted a smile and a quick nod. She leaned close so only he could hear her. Say the word and we're out of here. For over an hour, introductions were made, a laundry list of names she'd never remember. Selma offered her wine twice. Twice, Rachel said no. There was no way in hell she wasn't going to be able to bolt out of here if Owen so much as sneezed. The room was overwhelming for her, and she wasn't the center of everyone's attention. The dinner table stretched to accommodate the mass of people. If there was a kids' table to be had, Owen would have been the only one at it. Apparently, the two cousins in their late 20s, who had new families, were living out of state. Owen answered the polite questions about school and adjusting to the move.
When he didn't offer more than brief answers, Uncle Theo, who was the obvious drinker in the group, changed the subject to TJ.
"So are you gonna stick around now?"
the older man asked. TJ glanced at Owen.
"That's the plan."
"I thought a photojournalist spent their time in foreign countries, chasing wars," Owen said.
"I'm ready for something new."
"Have you found a job here?" Rachel asked, really wanting to know all the details she could about TJ's sudden change of heart about traveling all over the world.
"I'm working on it."
D'Adria spoke up.
"Did you know your father has had his work featured in just about every political magazine and national newspaper in print?"
"No."
"Well, he has. He's quite famous in his field."
Rachel couldn't help but wonder if that were true, why it was he didn't have a job with the first place he interviewed.
"I hope the sacrifices you made were worth it,"
Owen said directly to TJ. TJ didn't respond. Instead, he took a long swig of his cocktail. Several conversations started around the table, taking the light off them. By the time dinner was done, Owen looked like he'd had enough. Much to D'Adria's and Tarek's distress, Owen said he wasn't feeling well, and Rachel ran with his cue. While Owen said goodbye, TJ pulled her aside.
"I want to start seeing him."
"That really isn't up to me."
"I want a chance with him, Rachel."
She lowered her voice. "Then do yourself a favor and don't pull this kind of crap on him. Ask him what he wants and respect his response."
"He's just a kid."
"No, that's where you're wrong. He's 15 going on 25.
He has a mind of his own.
Don't treat him like a child." It looked as if TJ wanted to argue. He didn't. Owen was silent most of the way home. Then the floodgates opened.
"Where the hell were all those people my entire life?"
"I don't know.
Some of them had sticks up their ass, just like the weather killers."
"Selma was nice. Theo was real.
He was drunk." "It doesn't get more real than that," she said.
He rolled his head back.
"What is TJ up to? Since when does he want to be a dad?"
"Did he tell you that?"
"Yes."
"How do you feel about that?"
"Like he's too late? He should have thought about it when I was a kid. I know my mom gave him a choice, never forced him to step up. But that didn't mean he shouldn't have."
Rachel turned off the interstate. "I hear you, Owen. But before you blow him off, think about what you might be missing the rest of your life if you do."
"Like what?"
"That big family?
With the hag?"
Rachel grinned. "Every family has at least one hag.
I bet there isn't one hag at Jason's tomorrow."
That was probably true. "Just think about it. Don't cut people out of your life because of one hag and one deadbeat dad." She pulled onto their street. "Oh, by the way."
"Oh no, what?"
"About tomorrow.
Don't tell me it's canceled. Jason promised me a match on Call of Duty."
The thought of Jason hashing out a video game with Owen had her smiling. "No, we're going."
"Then what?"
She pressed the button on the remote and pulled into the garage. There wasn't an easy way to tell him, so she just did.
"Jason is my boss."
"What do you mean?"
She cut the engine, opened the door so the dome light lit their faces.
"I didn't find out he was my boss until after I picked him up on the side of the road."
"How could you not know he was your boss? Don't you see your boss every day?"
"Okay, he's not my direct boss. He owns the company."
"You're kidding."
She let herself out of the car, expecting Owen to follow.
"It was super awkward at first. Still feels strange. Anyway, tomorrow you'll meet his brothers and their wives. I was told there were a handful of other people coming, but nothing like we saw tonight."
Owen shrugged, rather unaffected by the news.
"As long as no one claims to be a long-lost uncle or cousin once removed, I'm good.
No risk of that."
Inside the house, they dumped their coats in the mudroom and turned on the lights.
"Thanks for having my back tonight,"
Owen said. I'm always going to have your back.
He offered a rare one-arm hug and then turned to go to his room. She watched him go, pride in the man he was becoming filling her chest. Later, once the light in his room went off, she dug into her closet and played Santa for the first time in her life. Chapter 15. Nothing could have prepared Rachel or Owen for Jason's home. With Owen guiding her with a GPS on his phone, they turned into a drive that had a private gate.
"Is this it?" Owen asked.
He sat up in his seat, staring out the window. She glanced at the address, looked at what she'd written down.
"Yep."
After ringing the bell, they waited as the gate opened to let them through. They drove for what felt like 5 minutes before the tree-lined drive opened up to the house. The sprawling ranch home had to be 3 stories tall at the highest point, but spread the length of 6 of the houses on her block. The circular cobblestone drive had a massive fountain in the center and a 2-story garage to the side. She gasped, "Holy shit!" Rachel was fairly sure Owen just dropped an F-bomb.
"How big is this company?"
"It's pretty big," Owen pointed out beyond the house.
"Are those horses?"
"I think so."
Jason had horses? How did she not know that?
"I've never ridden a horse." Unlike the night before when they meandered out of the car, tonight they scrambled a bit quicker, unable to wait to take it all in. The massive front door opened, and Jason stepped outside.
"Dude!"
Owen ran up the stairs.
"This is your house?"
Jason received the one-arm hug from a smiling Owen.
"Ridiculous, isn't it?" "It's epic! Are those your horses?"
"Yep."
"Wow, can I go explore?"
"Go, knock yourself out." Rachel stopped him. "Don't you want to say hello first?" Owen ran off. "Apparently not," she muttered. She brought another obligatory bottle of expensive wine and a token host gift. Jason walked down the steps.
"Let me help you."
She handed him the wine and closed the car door. "I should have guessed you lived in a place like this."
"It was my parents' idea of nirvana."
"Not yours?"
"It's okay."
Rachel rolled her eyes. "Okay? Really?" She looked up. "I bet you didn't hang those lights."
"Nope. We brought in a crew."
"That's crazy." She started walking toward the door. He stopped her.
"Wait."
"What?" Jason stepped in front and lowered his lips to hers. It was warm, inviting, and way too brief.
"Merry Christmas."
Was this what they were now? Greetings with a kiss, butterflies in her stomach, a never-ending smile on her face?
"Jason, don't worry, I won't do that in front of everyone."
She grinned.
"Yet."
She moaned.
"Come on, wait till you see the rest of the house. I think you'll like it."
Like was not a word to describe the Fairchild estate. Wood and stone, warm colors, and Christmas everywhere. The grand room housed a massive fireplace small children could walk into. Floor-to-ceiling windows looked out over a lake sprawling beyond a massive span of dormant grass. Jason's Christmas tree, or one of them, from what she could see in just the one room, stood at least 14 feet tall.
"I'm speechless," she told him.
He helped her out of her coat. His hands lingered on her shoulders. He led her to the windows and pointed beyond the lake.
"In the summer, everything is green. My father stocked the lake so we could pretend to fish, although my mother refused to let us kill the things. When she was out with friends, my brothers and I would cook them on an open fire just beyond the trees."
"Defiant kid," she laughed.
"Does Owen fish?"
"He was raised by a woman. I doubt he was given the chance."
"We'll have to change that."
"We?"
They were a we?
He told me he was going to start the Taekwondo classes in January.
Yeah, he's excited.
Jason placed a hand on her hip and squeezed. He's going to be great at it.
The sound of footsteps had Jason dropping his hand. I thought I heard voices.
Monica walked in and greeted Rachel with a hug.
We're so glad you could come.
Thank you. This is unreal.
I know, right? You should see it from the air.
Rachel didn't think Monica was kidding.
Where's Owen?
Running around outside, Jason said.
Can I get you something to drink?
Rachel sighed.
Sure.
She was here, in his house, in his kitchen, with his family. She'd shoot him a look every once in a while, one that asked both questions. What am I doing here? And is it okay that I am? The few women he'd spent time with had never been in his personal world. They never felt right. Bringing them to the estate would have been like asking a woman to meet his parents. Until Rachel, he hadn't wanted to do that. Then she picked him up on the side of a snowy road, and his world changed. The sliding back door opened, and Nathan stepped inside.
Look who I found wandering around the hangar.
Nathan had his arm around Owen's shoulders. The boy beamed.
He has an airstrip, Rachel. A friggin' airstrip.
We do own a company that flies planes, Glenn said. Jason spoke up.
Owen, this is everyone.
Everyone?
This is Owen.
A chorus of hellos commenced. Owen walked up to Trent.
You must be a brother.
Trent hesitated.
Jason's brother?
He laughed.
Yes, I am. Trent.
And I'm Glenn.
Owen shook hands and looked around the room.
This is the complete opposite of last night.
How so?
Jason asked.
Rachel was the only white woman in the room, and today I'm the token black kid.
You're black? Mary asked with a wink. They laughed.
Soda's in the fridge, Owen. Help yourself,
Monica told him. Owen didn't need to be told twice.
So is the inside of this place as big as the out?
He asked.
It's like Narnia,
Glenn told him.
We'd play hide and seek for hours. That's because Trent would fall asleep in a closet and we'd get bored trying to find him.
I'd get lost, Owen said.
He twisted at the sound of the train as it passed through the room.
There's a train?
For a moment, Trent and Glenn glanced at Jason, and the three of them shared that first moment again. The one when their father watched their reactions as the train made its way into the room for the first time.
It just gets better,
Owen said, following the path of the train out of the room.
Makes all the hours putting that thing up worth it,
Glenn said.
You have a train moving around your house.
Rachel shook her head. Jason leaned against the counter.
Christmas and trains. What's not to love?
Hours later, after their neighbor Betty arrived with her yippie Jack Russell and Mary's family joined them, they sat around the living room, watching the rain fall outside the window.
5 degrees! We only need 5 lowly degrees, and I could have had my first white Christmas,
Owen complained.
It will happen if you live here long enough,
Monica told him.
No more holidays and flip-flops.
By February, you'll wonder if the sun will ever come out, Mary told him. Glenn pulled his wife close.
And on February 2nd, we'll fly to sunshine to forget the cold.
Do you all know how to fly?
Owen asked. Jason nodded, as did his brothers. Owen sat, dumbfounded.
Have you been in a plane, lad?
Nathan asked.
My mom told me I was, but I don't remember it.
Jason glanced at Rachel. We did the road trip thing when we moved, she said. Trent leaned forward, filled his glass from the bottle of wine on the table.
Oh, we need to fix that.
Owen grinned.
I'd taken my first solo flight by the time I was 14,
Glenn told them.
Bragging rights by 2 months because I was the firstborn and Mom wouldn't let me go up alone until I was 15.
Jason added. Once the laughter faded, Owen sighed.
My mom would have liked you guys.
Rachel was close enough to Owen to reach out and touch his shoulder. There wasn't a person in the room that didn't become acutely aware that this was the first Christmas